Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
He had been in the cave for only a short time, it seemed. But when he finally emerged, the world he knew was gone, and it had left him with a strange inheritance. Inheritance by Edward W. Ludwig. That's next on the Lost Sci-Fi Podcast. This is the second sci-fi short story written by Edward W. Ludwig on our podcast. I chose to narrate this story because I was searching for another story by Ludwig, and this type of science fiction is a favorite of mine. Our story can be found on page 150 in the very first issue of Imagination Stories of Science and Fantasy in October 1950. Inheritance by Edward W. Ludwig. It shone as a pinpoint of silver far away in the midnight blackness of the cave. It shone as a tiny island of life in a sea of death. It shone as a symbol of his mercy. Martin stood swaying, staring wide-eyed at that wonderful light, and letting its image sink deep into his vision. His eyes lidded as consciousness faded for an instant, then opened. "We've almost made it," he gasped. "We've almost made it, Sandy. You and me and the pup." His hand passed tenderly over the puppy, a soft, hairy ball of living warmth cradled in his arm. And from out of the darkness at his feet came a feeble bark. Martin choked on the ancient tomb-stale air. "We can't stop now, Sandy," he wheezed. "We're almost there, almost at the entrance." He shuffled forward over the cold stone floor of the little cave, the thick dead air a solid thing, a wall that pressed him back, back, back. But the light grew larger, expanding like a balloon, and suddenly there was a skittering of dog paws over stone, and a joyous, frantic barking. "That's right, Sandy. Go ahead. Breathe that air. That fresh air." Martin staggered once, his lean, tall body thudding against sharp rock in the side of the cave. Then a draft of air blew cool and fresh into his face, and a strength returned to him. Abruptly, he was at the source of the light, at the cave's entrance, a hole barely large enough for him to squeeze through. The blinding light of day fell upon him, like a gigantic crashing sea wave. He closed his aching eyes and fell to the side of the rock-strewn hill, sucking the clean, sweet air deep into his lungs. At length, he sat up, holding the pup in his arms. 2 days in that hole of hell, he murmured, and it's all your fault. A month old, and you have to start exploring caves. He cocked his head. Still, I guess it's partly my fault. After all, I got lost, too. Sandy, a black and white fox terrier, barked impatiently. Okay, Sandy, okay. We'll go home. Shakily, Martin rose. His mind was clear now, the fogginess washed away by the cool morning air. There was only hunger, that great gnawing hunger, and thirst that made his throat and mouth seem as dry as ancient parchment. As he stood overlooking the valley below with its green fields and little groves of trees, a realization came to him. The world wasn't so bad after all. Up to this moment, he'd almost hated the world, with its wars, its threats of mass destruction, its warnings of atomic dusts and plagues that could wipe out humanity within an hour. He'd most certainly hated the cities with their blaring, rumbling automobile monsters, with their mad rushing, their greedy, frantic, senseless, superficial living that was not really living at all. That was why he had chosen to live in the hill country, on the outskirts of the village, raising his few vegetables and making a trip every few days to the village store to purchase other necessities with his pension check from World War II. But now, he realized, it was good to be alive and to be a part of the green growing things of Earth. Sandy barked again. Okay, okay, Sandy, we'll go. But Sandy came sidling up to him now, tail between his legs. His barking faded to a low, shrill whimper. Sandy, what's the matter? What's wrong? Even the whimpering ceased, and there was silence. Martin stared at the dog, not understanding. To him came a feeling. Something was wrong. A nameless fear rose within him. But the cause of that fear was intangible, locked just below the surface of consciousness. He took the fear, crushed it, pushed it back into the caverns of his mind that held only forgotten things. Nothing's wrong, he declared boldly. We're just tired and hungry, that's all. He strode down the quiet hillside toward the broad highway that stretched across the valley. He sang, "We're happy, so happy. Don't want to reach a star. We're happy, always happy, just the way we are." Strange about that tune, he thought. He hated popular music. But in a regrettable moment of optimism, he'd once purchased a second-hand battery video. After a 3-day saturation with toothpaste and soap commercials, he'd consigned the monstrosity to a remote corner of the woods. But that tune, of all the dubious products of civilization, had somehow stuck in his memory. Suddenly, he stopped singing, as if some inexplicable pressure had seized his throat, stopping the flow of words. It was quiet, so incredibly, alarmingly, terrifyingly quiet. Just ahead of him was the highway, its gray, smooth ribbon clearly visible through a thin wall of elms. But there was no swish-swish of speeding cars, and there were no bird twitterings, and no insect hummings, and no skittering of squirrels at the bases of trees, and no droning of gyroplanes. There was only silence. He broke out onto the highway, which was dotted with cars, and the cars were motionless. Some of them were crushed, charred wrecks on the side of the road. Some had collided in the center of the road to become ugly little mountains of twisted metal, and others were simply parked. But all were motionless. Come on, Sandy. Something's happened. Sandy wouldn't come. He arched his trembling body across Martin's legs, whimpering. Martin picked him up. Sandy in one arm, the drowsy-eyed pup in the other, he walked to the nearest car, which appeared undamaged. There were three occupants, a man, a woman, a girl child, and they were as if sleeping. No wounds, no discolorations were on their flesh. But their flesh was cold, cold, and there were no heartbeats. They were dead.
We won't go home yet, Martin said softly. We'll go to the village.
He walked. He walked past 100, 1,000 silent cars with silent occupants, past green meadows that were dotted with silent fallen cattle and sheep and horses. There was a new fear within him now, but even greater than the fear was a numbness that felt like a sleep-producing drug had dulled his mind and vision and hearing. He walked stiffly, automatically. He was afraid to think and reason, for thought and reason could bring only madness.
At the village, we'll find out what happened, he mumbled.
At the village, he found out nothing, because there, too, was only a silence and the white, still people.
Perhaps in the city, he murmured. Yes, the city.
The city was 20 miles away, and he selected an automobile, one in which there were no still people. It had been a long time since he'd driven, nearly 10 years, but after a few moments of fumbling, remembrance came easily. With Sandy and the pup on the front seat beside him, he drove. The city was as empty as an ancient skull. There was no life, and no reminder of life. There were no still people, and no automobiles, and no movement, and no sound. The towering white office buildings, the broad avenues, the theaters, the parks, all seemed hollow and unreal, like a desert mirage that would dissolve into nothingness at the whispering touch of a breeze. Martin mumbled, I reckon, Sandy, that everybody left the city. They headed for the country. That's why we passed so many cars. He spied the office of the Times. Maybe we can find out something in there, he said. Come on, Sandy. Pup, you stay here. He parked the car and strode into the building, past desks, cabinets, typewriters, stacked bundles of newspapers. Then he saw the man. He was one of the silent men, sprawled back in a chair, a typewriter before him. He had been writing, evidently, for one stiff white hand was still poised over the keys. Martin read the typewritten words aloud. The enemy had apparently underestimated the power of the odorless, tasteless gas. A nitrogen compound of extreme volatility, it has reached virtually every inch of the earth. The enemy is destroyed as we are destroyed. Gas masks and air filters have proved useless. The gas is highly unstable and should disintegrate within 48 hours. Yet because of the suddenness of the attack, we can conclude only that humanity is... The message broke off.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Suddenly, the newsroom was like a tomb, a burial of all mankind's accomplishments and frustrations, his good doings and evil doings.
Here into this room had flowed, ceaseless as a river, the stories of man's love, hate, struggle, fear, grasping, success, and disappointment. Side by side, they lay in the labyrinth of files. The stories of Mrs. Smith's divorce and a dictator's defeat, the sagas of a child losing a pet, and a scientist discovering a star. All equal now, as skeletons of great men and little men are equal, all buried in steel drawers and sealed by silence. Martin looked at the stiffened figure of the reporter. "I wonder why you stayed," he mused. "I wonder why you didn't flee like the others. Maybe you wanted to write the last news story ever written, and the most important one." "Yes, I reckon that was it." Slowly, Martin walked out of the building and slid into the car. Sandy welcomed him with a joy-filled barking and tail wagging, and tried to lick his face, and the pup attempted to waddle across his legs. "No, Sandy, don't." He stared unseeingly through the windshield. "Everybody's gone, Sandy. Everybody on Earth. Except me." His eyes widened slightly. "Of course, there might be somebody else somewhere. The gas never got to us in the cave. Maybe somebody else escaped somehow." He shook his head. "Nope, no use hoping for that. Odds would be 1,000 to 1 against my finding them. No, we just got to make up our minds that we're the last ones alive." The last ones alive. The thought was like flame in his mind. The numbness was gone now, as coldness thaws from a warm body. But there came to him a second thought, a horrible, fear-born thought, which he dared not say aloud, even to Sandy. A man can't live alone without hearing another human voice, without seeing another human form. A man isn't made that way. You got two choices now, just two, suicide or madness. Which will it be? Suicide or madness? Suicide or madness? He sat for a long time, his mind a jumble of indecision. Then at last he thought, "I don't want to go mad. The other way is best. We'll make it easy. Carbon monoxide would be the easiest way." But suddenly there was a churning and a twisting in his stomach, as though it were being squeezed by a giant hand. "Golly, Sandy, we forgot to eat. And we haven't eaten for 2 days. And to himself he said, "This'll be our last meal, the last we'll ever have." He took the pup in his arms and Sandy followed. He spied a huge sign not far away, Café Royal. It was a magnificent restaurant, the carpeted, canopied entrance reminding him of the front of a sultan's palace. 3 days ago, if he'd been foolish enough to come to the city then, he'd have rushed past it with his hand protecting his pocketbook, hardly daring to look within, lest the stiff-shirted, high-chinned waiters and patrons think him a country bumpkin. But now, well, why not? He ambled through the vast dining hall with its multitude of white-cloth tables, its potted palms, its modernistic chromium bar. The high walls were decorated with soft-hued, multicolored murals depicting the rise of Western civilization. First the pioneers, the cowboys, then a factory scene and a war scene, and finally a group of spacemen entering a moon-bound rocket. Martin made a wheezing sound of admiration. "What a place, eh, Sandy? We should have come here a long time ago." Then he spied the jukebox. "There's one of them music machines, and it's lit up. Reckon the power's still on." Martin had always wanted to play a jukebox, but nickels back home were scarce. He pursed his lips. "Why not, Sandy? Nickels don't mean much now. And if this is going to be our last meal, we might as well enjoy it." He inserted a quarter. And after a few moments of pushing this and that button, music played. It was Song of the Stars, the latest hit. Vibrant, full, rhythmic. Not at all like the screeching from the second-hand video he'd owned once. While he listened, he strode to the bar. Not that he was a drinking man. He occasionally had a cold beer on Saturday evening, and that was all. But now, with that dazzling array of bottles glittering before him, "Nobody'll miss it now," he told Sandy. He poured himself three fingers of scotch and downed it thirstily. "Ah, been a long time since I had anything like that. Now, let's see what's in that kitchen." Electricity was still on. Refrigerators were humming, and Martin's gaze wandered appraisingly over red, juicy T-bones, over dressed chickens, turkeys, rabbits, hams. "Reckon we're too hungry to wait for chicken," he drawled. "Guess T-bones would be nice for a last meal. How about it, Sandy?" Sandy barked. Dinner was soon ready. Fried T-bone, mashed potatoes and dark gravy, caviar, some kind of soup with a fishy taste, apple pie with strawberry ice cream, chocolate cake with vanilla ice cream, maple nut, tutti frutti, and pineapple ice cream, and coffee. Martin settled back and puffed on a 50-cent cigar. "You know, Sandy, it wouldn't always be like this. In a couple of weeks, there won't be any more power. Food will spoil. There'll be only canned stuff." He frowned thoughtfully. Perhaps he'd been wrong. Perhaps suicide was not the best way. He could have a few pleasures in the next day or two, if madness didn't come. And if madness did start to come, well... It was a sleek, streamlined jet job, the automobile of automobiles. Not an antiquated monstrosity like the 51 coupe he'd been driving. He stared through the window at its teardrop lines, at its broad, transparent top, at the shiny chrome and gold. "We shouldn't be thinking about such things, Sandy. We should be thinking about all those people. Those poor people who died. All the men and women and children." For an instant, grief welled up within him. A cold, almost sickening grief. But abruptly, it became an impersonal, remote kind of grief. It was like a 4th of July rocket shooting out a blinding tail of crimson and then bursting. Its body crumbling into 1,000 pieces, 1,000 tiny sparks, falling and fading and dying. Still, they knew it was coming, didn't they, Sandy? And they didn't try very hard to stop it. He looked again at the car. "Reckon it won't do any harm to see how it runs. After all, if we're going mad, we might as well enjoy ourselves first." The window display in the sports shop fascinated him. There were guns and fishing rods and fur-lined jackets and shiny boots and bright woolen shirts and sun goggles and camp stoves and... "Don't reckon the guns would do us much good," Martin murmured, "seeing as how there's nothing left alive except us. Might be fun to shoot 'em, though. I remember when I was a kid how I used to shoot windows out of old houses." He chuckled softly. His gaze traveled to the fishing equipment. "Golly, Sandy, I bet there's fish left in the oceans. The gas never touched us there in the cave. I'll bet the fish, or a lot of them, escaped too." He glanced disapprovingly at his thin, faded shirt, dirty khaki trousers, and worn, scuffed shoes. Those clean, bright woolen clothes in the window would be nice. Very nice, on cool nights. "Might even have dog clothes in there," he said. "Maybe a dog sweater. How'd you like that, Sandy?" Sandy barked eagerly. He squatted on the floor of the travel office, surrounded by a sea of crisp, gaudy-colored posters and pamphlets. What a place this old earth was. The pyramids of Egypt, the Tower of London, the Washington Monument, the Florida Everglades, the Arch of Triumph. The Eiffel Tower, Yosemite Valley, Boulder Dam, the Wall of China, Yellowstone Park, Suez Canal, Panama Canal, Niagara. Why, it would take a lifetime to see all them. "You know, Sandy, If a man didn't go mad from being alone, he could see a lot of things. He could travel anywhere on this continent in a car. If something went wrong, he could get parts out of other cars, get gas out of other tanks. There's plenty of canned food everywhere, enough to last a lifetime, a dozen lifetimes. Why, he could walk right into Washington, right into the White House and see how the president lived, or go to Hollywood and see how they used to make pictures, or go to them telescope places and look at the stars. Of course, there'd be bodies almost everywhere, but in a year or so they'd be gone, all except the bones, which never hurt nobody. He scratched his neck thoughtfully. Why, you wouldn't have to stay on this continent even. You could find a little boat and sail up the coast to Alaska, and then cut across to Asia. It's only 50 miles, they say. And then you could go down to China and India and Africa and Europe. Why, a man could go any place in the world alone. Sandy began to lick his face, and the pup released a nervous, eager bark that was more like yip-yip than a bark. That's right, Sandy. I'm not alone, am I? No more than I ever was, really. Never liked to talk to people anyway. You're only 2 years old. You'll live for 10, maybe 12 years yet, you and the pup. Maybe longer than I will. He rose, frowning. It was strange. There was a grief and a loneliness within him, and he knew they would be within him forever. But, too, there was an ever-growing peace and contentment and a satisfaction and a sense of still belonging to Earth and being a part of it. Strangest of all, he realized that there was no madness in his mind and no seed of madness. He felt like a boy again, about to begin a wondrous journey through unexplored and enchanted lands to discover new marvels. He left the travel office, Sandy and the pup barking and clamoring at his heels, and he was singing. We're happy, so happy. Don't want to reach a star. We're happy, always happy, just the way we are.
Next on the Lost Sci-Fi Podcast, the abandoned have neither rights nor hopes. They only have revenge. The Abandoned of Yon by Donald F. Daly.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.